The need for stakes was insatiable. Our volunteers were fashioning them from anything they could find, reinforcing bar cut from buildings that had been splashed across the landscape, twisted angle irons sawed from toppled gantries, splinters of blown-apart trees. Lashed into bundles, they piled up before the flaps of my tent and threatened to block me in. "I need to deliver those to the survey team on the rim," I said. "Would you like to walk with me?" Artisan Quinn had been sitting in a fetch for 6 days with Barb. My proposal sounded good to him. We pushed through mildewy canvas and came out into the white light of an overcast morning. Each of us shouldered as many stake bundles as he thought he could carry, and we began to trudge uphill. Our early trails down from the rim had already been turned into gullies by erosion, so new arrivals were going to work, cutting terraces and properly switched-backed paths into the dirt. Hard work, and a good way to sort mere vacationers from those who would stick it out and make their livings at Orlo. "The first draft of everything is going to be wood and earth," I told him, as we passed by a mixed team of avowed and seculars pounding sharpened logs into the ground. "By the time I die, we should have a rough idea of how the place works. Later generations can begin planning how to do it all over again in stone." Quinn looked dismayed for a moment. Then his face relaxed as he understood that I was talking about dying of old age.
"Where are you going to get the stone from?" he asked. "All I see is mud."
I stopped and turned back to face the crater. It had filled with water as soon as it had cooled down, and so, with the altitude we'd already gained, we could easily see its general shape. An ellipse, oriented northwest to southeast, the direction in which the rod had been traveling. We were above its southeastern end. Its most obvious feature was an island of rubble that rose from the brown water a few hundred yards offshore. But I directed his attention to a barely visible notch in the coastline, miles away. "The river that filled it spills in over yonder, near the other end," I said. "It's not easy to make out from here, but if you go up that river a couple of miles, you come to a place where the impact touched off a landslide that exposed a face of limestone. Enough for our descendants to build whatever they want." Quinn nodded, and we resumed climbing. He was silent for a while. Finally, he asked,
"Are you going to have descendants?"
I laughed.
"It's already happening. People started getting pregnant during the anti-swarm. We started eating normal food and the men stopped being sterile. The first devout baby was born last week. I heard about it on the reticulum. You'll find our access is a little spotty. For a while, Saman, he's our ex-Eda, was keeping it running all by himself. But more ex-Eda show up here every day. We have a couple of dozen now."
Quinn wasn't interested in that part of it. He interrupted me.
"So Barb could one day be a father?"
"Yes, he could." Then, better late than never, I worked out the implication.
"You could be a grandfather."
Quinn picked up the pace, suddenly eager to get Sant Orlo's constructed now. Huffing along in his wake, I added,
"Of course, that raises the ancient breeding issue, but we know enough now that we can prevent a forking of the race into two species. It puts some responsibility on us to make places like this welcoming for what we used to call extras."
"What are you going to call them, us, now?" Quinn asked.
"I have no idea. What matters is that under the second reconstitution, there are two co-equal magisterium. People can come up with words for them later."
We had reached a place where the crater's formerly knife-like edge had already softened to a round shoulder under the action of rain and wind. It was dotted with a few opportunistic weeds and etched with colored string lines strung between stakes. "The boundaries will run wherever we put them. Here's one." I plucked at a red string.
Quinn was aghast. "How can you just do that? Go out and stake a claim? The lawyers must be going crazy."
"We have a small army of Prokians running their mouths for us. The lawyers don't stand a chance."
"So everything on this side of the string is your property?"
"Yes. The walls will run parallel to it, just inside."
"So you'll still have walls?"
"Yes, with gateways, but no gates," I said.
"Then why bother building the walls?"
"They have symbolic content," I said. "They say you're passing into a different magisterium now, and there are certain things you must leave behind."
But I knew I was not being altogether forthright. Half a mile away, I could make out a half dozen people in bolts, peering through instruments and pounding in stakes. Leo and the crowd of ex-ringing Vale of out he ran with now. I knew exactly what they were discussing. When war breaks out between the Magisterium and we plug the holes in the wall with gates, we'll want interlocking fields of fire between this bastion and the next to repel any assault on the intervening stretch of wall. I whistled between my fingers. They looked over at us. I pointed to the bundles of stakes that Quinn and I had just dropped. A couple of the Veilers began sprinting to fetch them. Quinn and I turned to descend the way we had come, but we were pulled up short by an answering whistle, which I recognized as Leo's. I looked his way. He gestured down the outer slope of the crater wall, trying to get me to see something. There wasn't much. Just a long slope of boiled earth, burned wood, shredded insulation, and pulverized stone. Farther away, a flat place where pilgrims like Quinn had parked their vehicles. Finally, though, I saw what Leo wanted me to see. A vein of yellow star blossom rushing up the slope.
"What is it?"
Quinn asked.
"Barbarian invasion," I said.
"Long story." I waved to Leo.